What is up and welcome to another episode of Combo's Court. Don't forget to rate, review, punch down on that subscribe button. Today's show, college basketball analyst for Fox Sports Radio, Doug Gottlieb, joins in to react to some of the happenings in March Madness. We discuss Kentucky's upset loss, Filipowski's NBA outlook, X factors for UConn, and more. Just a fantastic conversation with Doug. This episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. For a first deposit match up to $100, use code COMBO. That's right, use code COMBO for a first deposit match up to $100. Without further ado, let's get into it. Doug Gottlieb, let's get right into it, Doug. It seems like Kentucky had a goalkeeper problem. What were your biggest takeaways from the upset loss?
Well, I mean, like, look, I knew about the goalkeeper kid because last year I was a finalist for UW Green Bay to be the head coach there. And I have a guy in Wisconsin who's a longtime AAU coach. And, you know, the way it works now, you got to be ready to go with the transfer portal. You got to know targets and likelihood and cost and all that stuff. And so he had told me, hey, there's this kid at Hillsdale who grew up in Wisconsin and he can shoot the fucking shit out of it. And I was like, all right. So, you know, I mean, if you can't shoot right now in college, you better be able to do everything else at a high level. But anyway, this kid can shoot the shit out of it. And then I know I've watched that program some because they had a kid, Max Hooper.
That's my great guy. Great guy. I know Max.
Yeah. So Max, he didn't take a two all year his senior year there.
Right.
Didn't take one two. And so when this kid's when people started to cover him this year, like, oh, he only took a two, it's like that's nothing compared to Max Hooper. Anyway, yeah, I mean, Kentucky did a pretty good job of locking and trailing. I was surprised they didn't switch out on him a little bit better, you know, because literally if you watch, I mean, I tweeted out every one of those shots. There was three times he shot faked and got to one dribble, you know. I was just surprised that they weren't kind of full denial, making him back cut to the basket, switching off on him. I mean, one guy's got 10 threes. I mean, you got to make a better adjustment than that. But the bigger issue was those freshman guards, they looked like freshmen. I've never been a big DJ Wagner guy and he didn't play well. And then Reed Sheppard, who people have gone crazy about.
Ridiculous. Number one's ridiculous.
He stunk yesterday. And then that's who Dillingham is. That's the problem. Is he plays the exact same way. If you're up 10, down 10, whatever, he's getting it, trying to go get buckets. And so when the three of them go 3 of 19, like, oof. And they were still in it. They were still in it, just a lack of maturity, I think, in how they played defensively. You know, you give up an offensive rebound here or there, that ends up creating more three-point shots. And then they got tight. They were tight to start, and they were tight late, and that got them beat.
Anything specifically they could have done to stop Golkey? Also, another thing is, like, he got 20 threes up. I mean, that's a lot of threes to get up in itself.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things you could do. I mean, just top lock them.
Right.
You know, yeah. Top lock them, switch out, you know, and we're switching out. Like one guy can't have 10 threes. That just can't happen.
Right.
Can't happen. So, and I get it. You know, you don't want to be like dog chasing your tail and leaving other guys wide open for layups and cuts. It also in the tournament, it's hard to be physical with guys. But I mean, how much of it was just all coming back to the ball, and he moved well, but it's like, let's not act like he was in perpetual motion moving without the basketball.
Right.
So yeah, you could have top blocked, you could have switched everything to get out to him. You know, you could have doubled him on every catch and crowded him and run him off the line, you know, make it to where he should never catch one where he doesn't have to dribble. Should
right.
always be dribbling into it.
Right.
But that's not the way Kentucky played it.
Does Coach Cal need a change in philosophy when it comes to his one and done style of doing things?
Well, I mean, like, one of the things that people call bullshit on is obviously those three guards play a ton, but like Trey Mitchell's, the rest of his team, he's got older dudes there.
It's interesting. He mentioned he might have to get older then. He actually mentioned that in the press conference. So,
yeah,
you know,
well, you have to. I mean, like, you can't win with fresh. You can't win with kids.
Yeah, right.
And now the other part that could help him a little bit is that not having the G League Ignite. Now, there's still overtime. There's still overseas options. So he, tell me if you think this makes sense. Okay, in a given year, there's like between 5 and 10 difference-making freshmen. Okay? Some years there's one or two. Some years there's maybe up to 10. Now, the first thing is that with the COVID years, so you have 5th and 6th year guys, those numbers, it's less likely to have a game-changing freshman, right?
Right.
The second part is then you were taking out a guy or two a year for Ignite, guy or two a year for overtime, guy or two a year goes overseas. And then with NIL, some of these teams, some of these teams are, they go just all in on one guy, you know? And then, you know, you're still fighting Duke for Cooper Flagg and whatever. Like, Cooper Flagg is a game changer. He can play, he'll be able to play right away. Even though he reclassed, so he'll still be on the younger side, he'll be fine. But you're not going to, you can't put four other freshmen around him and hope to win. So, anyway, so I think Kentucky, they've been hurt by the fact that they're not a program that has ever really taken transfers.
Right.
They're not one that's done a great job of player development. What they've done is, what he does is a great job of getting them motivated to play as hard as he can and letting each of their talents come out. And I think he's a very good game coach usually at reading the game. If you sit next to Cal when he's coaching a game, like, he knows what's up. Doesn't mean he can always fix it, but he can read the game really well. But they haven't done a great job of development. They haven't, it's with all the one and dones. And what happens there is, if you don't go one and done, you feel like you don't belong. You know, you stay more than 1 or 2 years, and it's like somehow you're shitty and you're not. So they don't have a culture really built into where guys can come in and engross themselves in that culture. So does he have to change? Yes, but I don't think it's he has to change in going after the stars. But, like, it's pretty obvious why he started DJ Wagner, right? Like, there's a promise made. There's no reason DJ Wagner should be starting right now.
Right.
He didn't have a good year. He doesn't shoot it well. He's a freshman. He'll be really good if he stays in college and develops. So those parts have to change philosophically. And then they got to do a better job in the portal. And I'm just interested. It's a little bit like the Yankees and Red Sox in that they have a shit ton of money, but it's how do you spend it? And I there's a couple of coaches I'm kind of working with on some of their portal stuff. And they all like these big ticket items. And I'm like, dude, I'll be honest with you. Like, build from the back forward. Right? Get, you know, 4 or 5 5th-year dudes that are versatile defensively, that just want to come in and win, that you can pay them more than they're going to make if they play in Europe, and that your, you know, 8th through 12th guy on the roster are 22 to 24-year-old guys that can come in and make shots. Right? Then worry about the rest. You then fight over the rest. Because then if you have a freshman out there, you put them with some grown-ups, you're fine.
Yeah.
You know, because what fans don't understand is freshmen don't – it's not just they don't know how to guard people. They don't have the they don't have the experience of understanding different actions, different ways to stop people.
It's like rookies in the NBA for the most part.
It's like rookies in anything.
Yeah. Right?
Rookies in anything. There's just some detail stuff that they miss on. And they also look, and I don't know how much you've been around high school kids, but they don't talk.
Yeah, I mean,
they don't talk. Now, they'll text the shit out of each other or throw videos on Snap, right? But they don't actually talk. So it takes you years of playing college basketball before you can talk and switch out and make adjustments on the fly. Because at the end of the day, it's like coaches, they know we can only do so much. You got to do it out there. And we may have the perfect defensive game plan, but they may do something we haven't seen all year.
Yeah.
So you got to adjust to it. You can't do it if you don't talk. And young guys traditionally don't come into college basketball learning how to communicate with teammates on the basketball floor.
Yeah. I don't want to stay on this topic too long, but you did mention the G League Ignite. And it's interesting because about 3 years ago, when we saw LaMelo go overseas and we saw the start of this G League Ignite, an alternative pass, people thought it was the death of college basketball, many people pointed to. But now it feels like it's back in the other direction with NIL and kids getting paid.
No, college basketball died. It still exists in different fashion. I mean, this shit out here is bullshit. It's the fucking worst, dude. I get it. I get it. That schools have made money, but we all know that the elite guys were always getting taken care of on some level. Like now you got guys that can't play holding teams and coaches hostages, and you can't play for three or four schools and have a college experience. Like, what are we doing? I disagree with it greatly.
Yeah. Well, what do you like most about college basketball these days? Is there anything you like more than maybe like?
I do love that. I like the guys staying in school and showing, you know, forever you'd have people in the NBA going, oh, they don't develop guys in college. Like, yeah, they do. They don't stay long enough to develop. But I mean, Golkey's a perfect example, like a no star D2 kid who, granted, he had 5 years to develop, but it lights those guys up. I mean, that shit's like me and you go into a park, get three other guys that know how to play, and we walk out there and you got a bunch of young guys like and we start moving the ball and running the court for a day. Like, that's what it feels like. That's why that was awesome.
Right.
So I like that. And I like that a lot of the coaches are starting to evolve and some of their philosophies are not just ingrained in NBA basketball, but European basketball. They're not doing as much college stuff. They're challenging themselves to be different. Yeah. So, yeah, I like that. I like that stuff. And I do think that the skill level across all of basketball is better than it's ever been. But the basketball IQ, toughness, cohesiveness, all that shit, that's what's lacking behind.
I've been saying this for a while. Athleticism is better than ever before. Skill level is better than ever before. But feel for the game is probably slightly down.
Why do you think that is? I have a thought, but why do you think that is?
The skill development culture we live in. It's like
which leads them to do what and not do what?
Just drill and not think.
Well, they don't play.
Yeah, they don't play enough. They don't. It has to be structured to play.
They don't just go to a park and just play all day and then go get a squig of Gatorade. Pizza.
That is true too, but that's not the European style way of doing things either. Like, they kind of are always in structure, but somehow they garner a feel for the game through that structure. You know, they're not really like go to the park type guys.
I understand.
Yeah.
Well, they don't go to the park, but they do. There are times in which they just play. Like, yes, Lithuanian dudes just on a day off, all you do is play. You're like, wait, I thought this was our day off. Like, now we play. Yeah. We play.
Yeah. Yeah. We drink coffee, we play.
We come, we play, cigarette, we go, we drink, then we go drink beer. Yeah, we go play. So, fuckers, exactly. They like to play, they like to compete. But I think it's the phone, moves them to not talk, and then they watch everything in clips. So they don't watch games as much. They don't play a game. They don't play, just organically play. And then, again, the culture of how we play with AAU is – There's always two or three games in a day. So it doesn't hurt you and it's not as important and it's not stop clock and there's not fouls and legit officials. And so it like looks like a game and feels like a game. And there are some elements to a game, but it's not really necessarily teaching them how to play in a game. I don't know. Like, did you see the MAC championship game where the kid from Kent State fouled? And they're up a point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you feel terrible for the kid, but then you start to ask, how the fuck did you not know that you had a 1-point lead in that situation?
Yeah.
Like, what?
I mean, that's coaching too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, Rob Sidorov's been doing it a long time, but like
you got to reiterate it over and over again. Like even when a team is
in live action, they score, they go up a point, and they get the ball bounced, they foul. You're like, dude, what the fuck? Like, look at the clock.
Yeah, even the Kentucky game yesterday, I'm like, that was too close to comfort when the Kentucky dude came down and shot a three. Like, I'm screaming, hands up. Like, don't even get near him.
Yeah, you know there was another game where Nevada as well. I thought that kid got fouled. The kid Davidson.
Yeah, get out the
County
way.
Kid, he got fouled on a three.
Yeah, get out the way.
There's a lack of awareness.
Yeah, get out the way. All right, so X factors for UConn if they want to repeat.
X factors. Well, I mean, Castle is a freshman. He's a stud. I think he's awesome, but he is a freshman. So how he reacts in those bigger games. They've shown they can play pretty well when he doesn't play well. I like that Klingon got hurt. I don't like that Klingon got hurt, but I like that they played and figured out, all right, if we don't have him, how can we still win? That mm-hmm. helped them. But I think that, I mean, honestly, Cam Spencer to me is the X factor. Like that dude's just got so much toughness and gigantic balls. Not physically. Mm-hmm. I'm not. Maybe he does have physically big balls. I don't know. I don't really want to get into that. Just metaphorically, he is fearless. I think that's the head of the snake. I think his toughness. He and Tristan Newton, like they got dudes that can really make plays. But I think if you do, I think Cam Spencer's a guy. If you can frustrate him, not let him get a good look, you know, go at him defensively. He makes it more on toughness and guile, and then they funnel you to Klingon. I think that's the guy you got to limit. Trying to attack the freshman point guard. He's not a great shooter yet. And then you got to make Klingon come out and guard out on the floor. If you can do that, I mean, that's what Creighton did. If you can do that, you can beat him. Those are the X factors for once they get in their offensive rhythm, shit, they're not losing to anybody. They're really, really good.
Kansas struggles against Samford. Is this cause for concern?
Well, yeah. I mean, they don't have Kevin McCullough. Yeah. So he's probably their best player. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have – it wasn't a perfect team to begin with. They're a team, you talk about roster construction, right? So they lost Artario Morris, who was a transfer from Texas, was a starting two guard. He got kicked off the team before the year starts. So that hurt them, and suddenly they became a very slim roster. The Timberlake kid who came in from Towson, he played pretty good last night. He just, it's been too high a level for him. So they got away with Furphy, the freshman, who's good. He's had some good games, but still just a freshman. But that roster is so top heavy, you know, with McCullough and I'm forgetting the big guy inside. I mean, yes, I don't think they're beating Gonzaga. And this was a team that just too top heavy to begin with to probably win a national championship. And then when you lose Kevin McCullough, it really, really hurts you. So I don't think they'll be playing next weekend.
How does Filipowski's game translate to the NBA level? Because it's so interesting to look at players like him who are such good basketball players, but sometimes it feels like you're not really sure if the game will translate at a high level.
Well, if you're not really sure, that means it probably won't, right?
Well, how do you feel about it?
I mean, who's he going to guard? I love him. Like, I love him, yeah. But like, I don't know how he plays at that level, as skilled as he is. I think he plays, but like to play. Like, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can't compare him to a Chet because Chet has such great length and is a completely different guy. 100%. And he's more skilled coming out than Chet was coming out, although he's had 2 years, Chet had one. But a good downhill player, he's got a good spin move, got some shit to him in the post, can shoot it. Like, I don't have an issue with necessarily the offense, but again, like, who does he guard in the NBA? That one I don't really know.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think he could become like a top 450 player in the world, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee you you'll play in the NBA if you don't fit a role, you know,
sure,
if you can't guard. So it doesn't mean he's not a good basketball player, but yeah, I think I'm with you there.
I mean, look, if he can get to where he can keep – because remember, like, here's what people don't realize about the NBA. Like, well, you know, he played the four. Well, there is no four defensively in the NBA. You have to guard one through four, mm-hmm. right?
I mean, you've said this before. Can you guard anybody? Can you guard everybody?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Or can you at least defend the rim?
Yes.
You know, if you can do that, and then he'll have to improve his shooting. He's improved from year one to year two. He's got to become an absolute lights out shooter. So, I mean, you know, he's better than a Steve Novak, but, you know, come the same limitations. Like, what does he do at the other end? They just go right at you. They just go hunting.
100%. That's what the NBA is now.
Yes. So it's so funny, right? Like, people who don't, they're like, no, they're moving the ball around. No, they're moving the ball around to create the mismatch that they ultimately want to get at the end of the possession.
Right.
Like, it's just sleight of hand. It's just like motion in football.
Yeah. All right. So
some people are deceptive about it, and some people do what the Lakers do. Like, no, let's just have LeBron dribble and your man screen, and eventually we're going to get the switch we want.
Can you forecast any more upsets going down the line? I don't know if you filled out a bracket or not, but what are you thinking? Okay.
I don't have it with
yeah.
me.
Yeah. What are you thinking in terms of upsets?
Hold on real quick. As far as my bracket?
In general.
I had.
Are you forecasting any? Besides this Kentucky one that we've just saw?
I did not forecast the Kentucky one. I thought Colgate could beat Baylor, and they're getting their noses rubbed. They're down 20 at the half, so that one looks terrible. I mean, Grand Canyon could beat St. Mary's. They got plenty of talent to do so. Have you seen the Japanese kid play?
I've heard. Kobunaga? People have been sending me clips.
This is because it's you understand. He's fucking terrible looking before he gets a basketball. Like, you're like, have you ever actually lifted a weight?
Right.
You know, you're like, you're looking at his body, and I'm looking, and when I played college, like, I was built like a brick shit house. I'm like, you're looking at him like, dude, but he can shoot.
Yeah.
He has all this different. I mean, first, Hoiberg's unbelievable. The stuff they run, the way the ball moves, you know, they run away stuff, they run twirl stuff, but he gets in an ISO and he can get rid of it crazy quick. He's got a little step back and unlimited range. And then he's got all the other shit to him. Tominaga is really fun to watch.
Yeah.
Now, they don't guard anybody. They don't guard you at all. Like, yeah. I did the game, the semis in the Big Ten tournament. They were up 51-40 at the half to Illinois. And Illinois scored, I think, 59 points in the second half. Just ran them completely out the gym. Keisai Tominaga is really fun to watch. He's got all, like, the craftiness. He's got this big smile on his face. He takes crazy shots, but he fucking makes them.
Yeah.
So, and like I said, he's, as an athlete, he's terrible looking. But he's really, really effective. So that's the guy. That'll be the most fun watch. If they can beat A&M, then they play a one seed. And then, you know, you have this NC State taking on Oakland. And NC State, I called their game earlier this year, and they were so shitty. But that DJ Burns dude, like, if he gets in low post, he's hard to stop. You've got to make him guard. I'll be interested. You know, 5 in 5 days is a lot taxing. And then you play an NCAA tournament game. You got a game off. Now you got to guard Oakland. You know, shooting all those threes. Wouldn't stun me if Oakland goes to Sweet 16.
Yeah. One more non-college basketball thing, then quick rapid fire, then we're out here. Doug, I never told you this, but one of my favorite podcasts ever is your podcast talking about your interactions with Kobe Bryant. Now, like, in the audio space, everything gets lost in the sauce now if it's not on video, because it's like a video space now. But I like, honestly, one of the greatest podcasts I've ever heard. What's your favorite memory of Kobe when it comes to your interactions with him?
Well, I mean, like, we weren't friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then my kid was going, so what happened was my kids went to the private school that his went to for a year. And then we moved back to Connecticut, CBS had me work out of the city. And that year was the year that he tore his Achilles tendon.
Wow.
So my kids actually got to know him because he would be at the school all the time, serving lunches, doing all kinds of shit. And I saw him at a couple picnics. And one of the reasons I think he liked the school was people didn't really mess with him. People didn't like, the kids came up to him and he just like hung out with them. He was just another parent. I mean, slightly different. So then when we moved back, I would say my favorite part of my interaction with him was he had Lady Mambas, and then my program, we practice at private schools that were literally half mile from each other. Mm-hmm. So they had, there's a high school called Sage Hill High School.
Okay.
And it's in Newport Coast. So there's the 73s at Toll Road. So when you're pulling up on the right side, there's this really beautiful high school, and that's where his girls practiced. And the plan was they were all going to go there for high school and then probably win 4 state championships. And then on the other side of the freeway, there's a park, there's a big church, and then there's TVT, which is the Jewish K through 12 school, Tarbut V'Torah. And so that's where we practiced. And we had, and Palinka's son played for me. He's now a high school sophomore. He's going to be a high school junior. Durham Palinka's his name. And so Kristen is Durham's mom. She's a doctor. She's actually like the pediatrician for all these kids.
Okay.
And so one night Kristen was there. She's like, why don't you guys scrimmage the Lady Mamba? And most of the kids, those girls were, they're my daughter's age. So they were like a little older. They're like a year older. And they were in eighth grade at the time? So it was probably when they're seventh or eighth grade. So all the boys want to do it. We want to scrimmage them. And we start texting back and forth. And he started sending me these drills that he does with his group. And I was showing what I do with my group. So just the fact that we're showing little like clips of our youth teams that have nothing to do with our own children. Like it wouldn't be like Gianna. It'd be somebody else. Like Alyssa Altabelli, who, God rest her soul. She's my daughter's best friend. She passed the crash. Like I would see videos of her in triangle breakdown sets. And I would ask him, like, do you still do the drills? Because my dad coached with Tex Winter at Long Beach State. So the drills he was doing were the ones that I was taught growing up for the triangle. And I thought, yeah, we hung out one night and had drinks, and he told me all kinds of stories. That was great. But just the idea that he was a basketball dork like the rest of us sending videos of his youth program, I thought was pretty cool.
All right, rapid fire. 5 digs real quick. Final 4. For this,
I had March Arizona, Madness. Purdue. Do I have UConn? I can go run out and look. Wait, I have it on my phone.
Your final four.
My final four. I have it. Just 1 second. Okay. I have Arizona, Purdue, Illinois, and Houston.
Greatest college basketball player ever.
College basketball player ever. From what aspect? What?
However you take it. However you interpret it, Doug.
Who's your? Well,
it got it for me. For me, it got to be Kareem or Pistol Pete.
Well, so here's my issue with both of them is I didn't see him play live.
Mm. I mean, really the guy, hard. I mean, Pete averaged 44 with no 3-point line. I mean,
he did. And now part of it, I'm skewed by my dad. I'm a huge Pistol Pete historian. Mm-hmm. Dale Brown, my dad were really close. And I got these Pete Maravich memories videos and stuff. But my dad would tell me, like, Pete took terrible shots, wasn't about winning. So I don't know. But 44 a game without a 3-point line, fuck. But his dad was his coach. So it wasn't like he was getting taken out.
Yeah. So who you got?
I would do in the modern era.
Okay.
In the modern era, Christian Laettner's most accomplished.
Yeah, I was thinking Laettner.
Larry Johnson deserves at least some sort of mention. Remember, he was junior college player of the year, and then they won national championship and lost in the semis. Who else? Trying to think who else. Ray Allen was the single best player I ever played against.
Is Jimmer in there? Is Jimmer in there somewhere?
No. Jimmer's like behind McDermott, but you know, he's crazy college scores. No. I will say Bill Self likes to tell people that when they played against Kevin Durant, Danny Manning was his assistant. Danny turned to him and said, "That's the baddest motherfucker that's ever played here." And when he's like, Bill's like, you know, you played here. He's like, that's the baddest motherfucker that's ever played here.
Yeah. Yeah. He was different. All right. SGA or Brunson?
Oh, Jesus. That's like asking me which one of my kids I love the most. Brunson.
Wow.
But my son believes that my son's just turned 15. So I give a shout out to Hayes Gottlieb. He's like, Dad, I think SGA is criminally underrated. He's better than Tatum. We talk about scores, like he's way more efficient than Tatum. He's better than, like, we talk about guys and Ant-Man. People talk about Ant-Man and Tatum, and he'd rather have SGA than the Ant-Man and Tatum.
Oh, I got SGA over Tatum. I agree with them. Yeah, I agree with them. Favorite podcast?
I like Slapping Glass a lot.
Okay.
They do all those breakdowns and stuff. I'll just tell you, like, I like ones. So I have, my podcast is All Ball. That's where I tell the stories.
Combo's been on there.
So I know you have, and it was really good. And your story's fucking, that's the shit I like more than some of these guys. They have really funny, they tell short-term stories, but I like just people's life stories. And I got the idea for that listening to Stern, which it was his show, but his show's basically become like a podcast now because they don't have to take breaks, I guess. I don't know. But I heard him interviewing Meghan Trainor and telling her story. And I was like, this is amazing. I got to do a podcast like that. So any of those ones where you just learn about people.
Totally agree. Doug, great stuff. You're always welcome back on the show. It's always great talking basketball with you. And talk soon.
Combo, you the man.
Talk soon.